Hello and welcome back. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We're at the wonderful Decode Conference here in Tokyo, Japan, and we have a special guest, a really cool company that's doing some awesome things with DevOps. So why don't we start with introducing yourselves, tell us who you are and what you do, and then we'll talk about Rakuten and your company. Let's start over here, bud.
I'm Yasunobu Kawaguchi. I'm working for this company, Rakuten, and as an agile coach for 4 years. Rakuten is mainly the electronic commerce company, and we are now expanding the bank and the financial area, the travel, this kind of the wide coverage, the portfolio, business portfolio.
Awesome.
And now they're expanding to all the U.S., the Americas, and the on the Europe.
We are
expanding, and then Asia also.
So if I'm understanding correct, Rakuten is an e-commerce company that's expanding into other things. Awesome.
Yes.
Let's get you to introduce yourself. Tell us who you are.
Hello. So my name is Kanyo. I'm cloud architect with Rakuten. Mm-hmm. I think it's really exciting to be part of the company, especially now when it's growing so aggressively.
Right. Yep. So you had a session earlier this morning, but I thought we'd get in a bit about how you perceive DevOps, mm-hmm. and then how you're starting to implement DevOps in your organization, because as I understand it, it's a global organization. And so doing something like this is difficult. So I'd like to know how you do it so our viewers can understand how they can do it in their organization too. So tell us how you feel about what is DevOps to you and your company. So we'll start with you, bud.
So in our point of view, that DevOps is a kind of the problem solution about the enterprise agile. Mm-hmm. How they deal with the team, the issues, mm-hmm. and the over team, the inter-team issues.
I see.
All right, yeah. And like organization thing or approval process.
I see. So DevOps for you is not just we need to get our software out. For you, it's an organizational thing.
Yes. How can we deploy something as the ordinary in most of Japanese companies has the much the approval processes.
I see.
And also we have the quality control, the quality assurance processes.
Uh-huh.
So we should automate or have the small team to the much faster than the ordinary process. That is our DevOps way.
I see. So you're saying traditionally in Japanese companies, there is a huge hierarchy of approvals and checks that need to happen.
Right.
Does that usually sort of make the DevOps process not work? And if it does, how do you counteract that in your company?
So this is two ways. One is the technical way.
Mm-hmm.
So we should have the skills and train ourselves and experiment everything. It's like the canoes there.
Sure.
And also we separate the permission to do that by their own things.
I see.
Yeah.
So it's more of like instead of having a top-down sort of hierarchy, you let people at the bottom sort of work stuff out.
Right. Then we will get the support from the managers or the executives. Then expand spread to the other each context.
Awesome. So let's talk about, do you live in Japan?
Yep.
So let's talk about your team as a whole. I understand you're a multinational team. How do you organize yourselves in a way that allows for this sort of rapid sort of deployment process?
So my team is actually very interesting because in our team, we don't have so many Japanese people.
Mm-hmm.
All the people are actually coming to Japan to work for Rakuten.
I see.
So this is the pattern. And we have the chance to work with people that have a lot of experience working in Europe and US.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy to adopt the new best practices. Really.
I see. So there's no challenge because I'm trying to understand, like, organizationally, are you the same as you were before? Or is it just because there's new people coming in that you can do this? How do you change your organization to be DevOps minded?
I think the organization is changing very quickly.
Okay.
With the new people, global people coming to Japan, we change the environment and we request more from our managers to follow the best practices. And when we give the right arguments, that will eventually all these efforts for DevOps and improving development process will lead to improved income for the company. They understand us and they support us. It's very interesting. The company is very big, but we have the freedom to pick our tools, technologies, and a certain freedom to go with a process optimization.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about sort of how, like, let's just say I'm an organization and I want to implement some of the DevOps best practices. How did you as a company go about doing that so those that are watching can sort of do the same kind of things? What do you think?
So there are so many practices in the DevOps, successful case studies outside our company. But we should do the experiment in our company or
right.
in each context. And then we should have the sharing, knowledge session. And I always, I'm kind of the bumblebee, mm-hmm. and go everywhere,
uh-huh.
and talk with every person, and get the case study to bring them into our study group.
That's awesome.
And also, we have different companies, different branch companies in different locations in the world. We have like a very strong presence in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. in San Mateo. And over there, we have guys that are very good in DevOps.
I see.
So for my team, they're a big influence because they have the freedom, even more than us, to work on the best practices. So basically, they're testing a lot of things, and after that, they're sharing with us.
Awesome.
So one of the patterns is to have these champions that are focusing strategically on DevOps, Kobaguchi-san, but also our colleagues in San Mateo. And then we learn from them and try to adopt as much as we can.
Awesome. So let's get into the nitty-gritty, because I'm a developer, I love programs. Let's talk about your main product, and let's talk about sort of maybe how it's architected, if you can, and let's talk about the pipeline that you have to get it from, you know, we just dev'd something all the way out to it's in production. Can you tell us about that, architecture and then your pipeline?
Okay. So definitely, on the architectural level, it depends, like, are we building something that is for production,
okay.
or we are prototyping something?
I see.
When we're prototyping, we have a lot of freedom. Then we interact a lot with Microsoft. We're giving a lot of feedback and working on a lot of features that are in private preview.
Mm-hmm. So, this is on Azure then, is what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah. So my team, we are focused 100% on Azure.
Okay.
Everything that we build is hosted on Azure. So for us, it's very easy. And we're trying to learn more and more about what will come next and how it will benefit our organization.
I see.
But when we're talking about production systems, of course, we have a very collaborative discussions inside the team in terms of architecture.
Right.
I think recently a good example is we decided to move to microservices.
Okay.
So there is a lot of challenges.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that challenge the model internally and externally from the team because you have to solve so many problems. You need to make a trade-offs, right? Mm-hmm. I really like the Mark Krasinovich and your piece on that.
Yeah, he's
this
great.
Is really helpful.
He's really good.
So. And everything is moving so quickly. So developers, architects, we sit together, we talk, and we try to find the best configuration for our architecture. Then we invest a lot in automation. We need to improve a lot on that, but we already are in a very good position because we use Azure. So you know, in Azure, we have PowerShell,
sure.
Resource Manager. So all the tools are there. And now we convince more and more our management that we need to invest more in automation, more in DevOps, and they're already aligned.
I see.
With that. So it's very good because with developers and architect, we decide the architecture. After that, with the DevOps dedicated people, this architecture is basically reflected. I can give you an example. We try to push our solutions to multiple data centers for redundancy.
I see.
This is decided on architectural level, but in the end, will affect the DevOps use cases that we need to implement.
Awesome.
Also, the build service is a very important piece of our development process. So over there, we concentrate our best practices, try to reduce the code review process, and integrate as much as possible automation.
I see. So let's go from like concrete, because I've heard a lot of DevOps talks about you need to do DevOps, and DevOps is important. And look, DevOps, we should wear a t-shirt that says DevOps. But as a developer, what I want to know is I want to get a specific example of here's some prototypes that I built that I want to get out in front of a customer. What is it that you do that? Do you check code in somewhere and then there's a series of tools that you use? Would you mind sharing that? I mean, I want to know like concretely, like if I was going to go and do something like this, how would I do it? What do you suggest?
The best way is that totally DevOps is the if the programmer writing code and commit the version control system and deploy once and go to the public and the customers. That is a DevOps way. What? But the in country, the, in most of our companies have the each the silos about that ops side and the server provisioning side or something. So they have also the initiative of the automation
side.
So our way, how can we deal with this kind of silo and talk each other and put streamline automation process into each department. Yeah. So if the, you are on the developer, so you already have the automation in your department.
I see.
That you can proceed the good test. And then talk with other people.
I see.
I can share how is our current implementation currently. We're using Git as a source repository.
Awesome.
So our Git is hosted on-premise in our data center, but we have a build server that is hosted in Azure.
I see.
So the developers check in the code. After the code review, this is merged. We have a gated build. So
the code review, is it a human thing that someone's looking at the code, or is it like an automatic thing?
So this is one of the good points that we actually shared during the talk today. Before that, we were very much dependent on human. But this became a huge bottleneck for us.
Of course.
Yeah. Yes. So now we try to push as much as possible tools in our build pipeline to reduce the human interaction on the code review. So now we integrate with StyleCop, SonarQube, code coverage, just to really decrease the need for code reviews. And also the code reviews has two purposes. One, more of the team members to know what's going on with the code. It's not purely, it's code sharing, right? It also have this notion that when you know that your code will be code reviewed, I think you put a little bit more effort to make
it
better. So we are using this slight nuance for that. But definitely, we're investing in putting more and more automation in the process. So, developer checks in the code. This passes from a code review and build process that is checked from StyleCop, SonarQube, code coverage that are the optimal levels. Then, at the build level, we integrate with Azure Resource Manager templates to provision the environment if some piece is missing. Then we deploy to two paired data centers. In our case, Japan East and Japan West. Mm-hmm. Usually we use a lot of Azure Web Apps, so we deploy to staging slots to avoid downtime.
I see.
And then we shared also a new way that we will be configuring traffic from production to hit the staging slots to see do we have any errors, and automatically, if we don't have errors, push this to production and release.
So it feels like there's a real pipeline. You have the code gets in, there's a code review, then you use the ARM templates to build the environment, then you put it in the staging slot, and if it works, you push it to production slot.
Right.
It feels like in this pipeline, is there any human interaction that you need to do, and how do you make that human interaction fast enough for sort of an agile workspace?
So we are now, so some so department now the the building the fully automated stack, and put the templates into the first the code base template.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, testing into the code base. They are provisioning into code base. The whole one place and share the repository and get the pull request from the other people to one place. Yeah, and then spread out the other department by the template level.
I see. Yeah.
So the operators or the developers do not need to interact with others after the code, writing code.
I see. Yeah. So let's talk about the code review process, because that to me feels like one of the few, because you can't automate code review completely out. I mean, can you?
Sure. I don't know. We cannot automate the code review. Code review is in the development team's the effort. That is okay. But sometimes the code review to the managers or some tech lead people, that is a little time consuming, I think. Yeah.
Because they might not be in the office when the thing is happening. They might be in some meeting. And do you feel that that's a bottleneck right now?
It was a huge bottleneck, and I can tell you, this is one of the huge problems for our team. So we decided as a team to a little bit relax, relax the conditions. But still, I feel there is a good reasons to have a code review, mainly for the sharing purposes.
Sure.
And also, we are seeing in our team the developers are gaining more and more skills. So we don't need to actually this audit out on code reviews, and especially when we have tools that guide the general style with a style cope, or we have like a little bit more generic tools like a Sonar Cube that inspect and make a very professional analysis on the code base. Mainly the code review is now sharing what we did, so everybody on the same page.
I see. So what are some of the things that you're trying to capture in code review with these automated tools? Like, for example, code coverage is a good metric, but I mean, it's a fuzzy one, right?
Yeah, right.
Style cop is a good metric, but it's really not telling you everything. So how do you strike that balance between code quality during code review and code automation when you're doing review?
I think it's a little bit difficult, but I think the main point of the code review is to see the code of the developer and basically propose maybe a better solution. Maybe I know a new technique that the developer doesn't know, or it's vice versa, right? So it's more like a, let's make this code better together. This is the initial goal.
I see.
And StyleCope and a Sonar Cube, they allow us to automate more of the things that are more like a type of structure of the code, that we are following the common standards. Mm-hmm. But the actual meaning, the actual logic is very difficult still to be code reviewed. Maybe in the future when we have AI, we'll be able
right.
to completely automate everything.
That's interesting. So let's talk about a StyleCop and Sonar Cube. For those that haven't used StyleCop, what does StyleCop give you during the automated code review? And what does Sonar Cube give you? Because obviously you're using both, they must be doing different things for you.
Sure. So for the StyleCope, we had constant issues that some of the developers didn't follow the common practice in the team to put commands on some public methods or classes that we want after that to extract for automatic documentation.
Sure.
And this was taking a lot of time for the code review because it was spotted and say, hey, please add your commands.
Right.
And this is actually very easy to be automated.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely.
So this is one good example. We have very small things like what should be the spacing, like the braces and stuff like that. Really small things, but it's very important to have the code consistent so you know that it's one team. It's not like two different individuals that are not agreeing on the same. And it takes time to agree on the style, right? But when this work is done, it's all good. For Sonar Cube, it's a little bit more advanced type of analysis. We can see security vulnerabilities.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and also general optimization. It's not so much to the same syntaxes of the project. It gives us basically ratings, so we can see what is the trait. We report these ratings in our weekly meetings to the management, say, okay, this project increased the SonarCube rating, but this fall. And they ask us why, and say, hey, we needed this quick bug fix, so we didn't have so much time to refactor, and we acquired that to the technical debt.
So you mentioned the notion of your code is different because you have the prototype stuff, and then you have the production stuff. So is this what you're talking about, the production or the prototype stuff? And then what's the difference in your pipeline if it's production versus prototype?
So for me, the prototype is something that very quickly we can come up with a concept. We don't invest so much in code quality. This potentially, maybe even if it's not included in the normal build pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a manager or some other department said, hey, do you know about this technology? Can you tell me something? Can you prototype something for me? And we go and make it very simple. We simplify the scenario. And we just focus on one feature or a few features so we can explain to the management and give like a quick understanding. Is this will be helpful? Because when we're explaining just in words, it's almost difficult, yeah?
Yeah, I know.
It's better just even to press a button and to see what will be the interaction than explain you how it will work, right?
So do you create a branch? And then from that branch, you go, is it automated build system?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Same process with code review and everything, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But usually we'll be on a branch and probably will not be so strict how we want this thing to go to a production. Probably this will be like a private instance that we want to share with a few people.
This is awesome stuff. How long did it take you to go from Rakuten, you know, just doing the standard thing to Rakuten DevOps? We have about a minute left.
We don't have the concrete number of the how can we change how many years we should use we should spend because we have so much businesses. So our mission is to provide the information and catch together
right.
into one place. And also, my focus is the user's perspective, mm-hmm. not the customers.
I love it.
The developers, their perspective, the infrastructure people, and they have so many solutions. But in the developers, we should collect each case studies.
I love it. But we're out of time, so we're going to have to stop there. Thanks so much. We'll see you at the next round.
Thank you.